This is Politico Energy. Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron. I'm Anthony Adragna. Over the past week, California has been hit by multiple crises at once. Not only is the state still dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, but it's also been hit by a heat wave, and electricity capacity issues have forced utilities to impose rolling blackouts all across the state. And on top of that, extreme weather conditions have also sparked hundreds of wildfires in every corner of California. So today we're going to talk to someone who spent years documenting these wildfires, and we're also going to check in with one of our energy reporters in the state about the energy crisis still unraveling. It's Friday, August 21st.
My name is Stuart Paley, and I'm a photographer based in California that focuses on covering wildfires and climate change issues in California.
You guys need help?
I've been spending the summer in Montana writing my book called Into the Inferno, A Photographer's Journey Through California's Wildfires and Fallout.
Come on, Lenny! The fire is here!
And then we have this giant heat wave and massive lightning bust in Northern and Central California and this complex of fires. And I said, hey, this is an opportunity for me to get back to California to write the last chapter of the book on the ground and also do a little news coverage to help document everything. Flying into SFO, I counted 13 separate pyrocumulus clouds, and a pyrocumulus is essentially the smoke column that a fire creates when it burns upwards and it creates its own weather. So we were cruising at 35,000 feet, and I asked the pilot when I got off the plane. He said these were about 20,000 feet tall, and the co-pilot was an Australian, and he said, I haven't seen this many fires since we flew in Australia. There's tourists on the Golden Gate Bridge taking pictures and selfies in the visitors area, and then in the background you can see the pyrocumulus or the smoke from the Hennessy fire and the LNU lightning complex in Vacaville just exploding in the background. So it's just this idyllic touristy scene of San Francisco amidst pandemic.
It was like the entire wall of the forest was just coming at us down the road. It was so scary.
Three ambulances for burn injuries, two victims en route.
We talk about this idea of a new normal, but there's nothing normal about any of this.
There are flames on both sides of the interstate.
I've lost everything.
If anything, I call it our new reality or a new wildfire reality in California. And essentially what we're going to see is more violent episodes of fire like this. I don't mince words when I say that we're in a climate crisis. Look at what's happening in the Bay Area right now. Tens of thousands of people are living in hotels in the middle of a pandemic. And then the firefighters themselves, the men and women out on the fire line, have been up for 24, 36 hours at a time doing everything they can to protect houses when they know that their families are getting smoked down. In some cases, their own families are having to evacuate. There's a dispatcher I know for Sonoma County. Her entire family had to evacuate to their grandparents' house, and she had to go in at 3 a.m. to the dispatch center to work. So this is affecting everybody up here.
That was Stuart Paley, a photographer who, as you can hear, was in the middle of the inferno that's still consuming California right now. So just laying the groundwork here, it feels kind of like a perfect storm of factors in California, with the heat wave that's ongoing and now wildfires popped up throughout the entire state. Colby Bermel, you cover California's energy policy for Politico. I wonder if you can just sort of paint a picture of what the scene is like out in California right now?
Yeah, I would say that it's both an actual storm and a metaphorical storm, which is quite something. There are some historic lightning storms in the Bay Area that have been sparking lots of fires. There is a heat dome that is basically over the entire state. And those physical weather conditions have caused great air conditioning demand, which in turn has been putting lots of strain on the power grid. And normally California's grid operator is able to handle hot days, but there's been some certain circumstances that have caused there to be the first rolling blackouts since the 2000-2001 energy crisis.
And so do we have a sense at this point as to what caused the blackouts, I think, over the past weekend and then into this week?
So the immediate cause is relatively clear. We had all kinds of energy resources going down over the past weekend. We had two natural gas power plants trip, which means they were fully running, then they malfunctioned. But we also had some issues with renewable power. So we had some cloud cover over the weekend that resulted in some solar power not being online. And we also had some die down in breezes, which resulted in wind turbines also not being able to spin up power.
And so for those people that remembered the last couple of years, there were blackouts, but those were a different type of blackouts.
Correct, exactly. So last fall saw a particular surge in what's known as public safety power shutoffs. And those are when the utilities themselves decide to preemptively turn off their power lines so that the wind doesn't blow trees into them, that they don't fall onto the ground and spark fires. Those have been done over the past maybe 5 to 10 years, but they were especially strong when PG&E did them last fall after that company had started several years worth of deadly fires.
The president earlier this week put out a tweet that blamed Democrats for, quote, intentionally causing these blackouts, and then also blamed Green New Deal policies. How do you evaluate that tweet? Is any part of that true?
Well, his first part of the tweet about Democrats being the ones who implemented the rolling blackouts is totally false, because CAISO is the California Independent System Operator, and they are a public benefit, nonpartisan, nonprofit corporation that manages the grid on behalf of the state's three big utilities. And while CAISO's five board members are appointed by the governor, the actual people making the decisions are nonpartisan, non-political appointees who are grid experts who sit in a futuristic-looking control room. In the words of the CAISO CEO, said a shift manager downstairs in our control room made that decision.
That's quite an image. So the state's been able to avoid blackouts for the last couple of days. Do you expect that to continue, or is the situation still kind of fluid at this point?
The situation is pretty fluid, I will say, but customers have done amazing amounts of energy conservation, meaning that they're setting their thermostats at higher temperatures, they're choosing to defer when they use major appliances, they're closing their blinds, and those conservation efforts, according to CAISO, have taken several thousand megawatts worth of demand off the system, which really makes a difference. And CAISO said that approximately 3,000 megawatts worth of demand was taken off the system, and that's equivalent to about 2.25 million homes that are choosing to somehow reduce their energies. So that's a really big deal.
Wow, that's incredible. And then let me just ask, since we are seeing a spike of wildfires around the state, are we worried now at this point of seeing similar kind of strategic blackouts being done to minimize new wildfires coming on board, if perhaps the heat emergency part of this has been figured out through the efforts of consumers?
So what caused last year's public safety power shutoffs were wind storms, and these were winds that were blowing at 70 to 100 miles per hour, even like in some instances. So we haven't had wind necessarily yet, but that usually is the case in a few months in the October to November timeline. That's typically the worst stretch of fire season for California.
Also, the already nasty primary fight for Massachusetts Senate seat just got even nastier. Yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi endorsed Representative Joe Kennedy in his run to unseat incumbent Ed Markey. Markey is the Senate sponsor of the Green New Deal and has been one of the leaders in the Senate, and before that, for decades in the House, on climate change policy, which is one of the reasons why Pelosi's endorsement infuriated environmental groups. In her endorsement, Speaker Pelosi said Kennedy understands what it takes to achieve progressive change, but the Sunrise Movement fired back, calling the move an embarrassment. Pelosi's support of Kennedy is remarkable on many fronts. First of all, Pelosi and Markey had a great relationship during his time in the House, when the Speaker even chose him to chair a House committee specializing on climate change. But it's also noteworthy because the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee's policy has always been to endorse incumbents, even unpopular ones, especially in the past few years when progressive challengers have taken on longtime Democratic incumbents. On the same day, Markey took to Twitter to address Pelosi's endorsement, complimenting her record and leadership, and congratulating his rival on securing the Speaker's support. Subscribe to Politico Energy wherever you listen, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want more energy news in your inbox, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. Carlos Prieto is our producer. Our senior producer is Jenny Ament. And our executive producer is Irene Noguchi. Our editor is Matt Daly. And on the show this week,
Colby Brummel,
Ben Lefebvre,
Zach Coleman,
Eric Wolf.
Thank you, and we'll be back again on Monday.
Chevron has spent over $1 billion building one of the largest integrated carbon capture and storage facilities, capable of capturing up to 4 million tons a year. Learn more at chevron.com/possibilities.